David Diamante. We are live from Manchester, England, and I've got a great guest with me today. He's in the main event, Chris Van Heerden. Chris, it is great to see you, my friend. How are you?
Man, it's even better to see you.
I appreciate that.
I'm amazing.
Yeah?
I'm soaking it all in and enjoying every little bit and making memories and just I'm relaxed. I feel good.
So you've never fought in the UK. You were going to fight Frankie Gavin, right?
Yeah, I was. There was once, you know, funny enough, those contracts were signed to fight Frankie Gavin. I remember it was going to be for the IBF Eliminator, the winner gets Cal Brook. Before I knew it, Cal Brook Frankie was on, and that didn't happen. And then when I was the IBO champion, I was going to fight Paul McCloskey in the UK. And that also last minute fell through. So always had the dream, always had the vision to come here. Never came here.
And now you're here. So, but yeah. I wanted to ask as a follow-up, have you been to the UK before? Have you spent time here?
Never.
Oh,
never,
so this is really your first time?
And I tell people this. I tell all my American friends this. I say, when you have an American passport,
yeah,
you don't understand the power you have. When you have a South African passport, you don't understand the struggle. It's so hard with my passport to travel because you need special clearance. You need so many documents, so many stuff. So never got the opportunity to come to the UK.
I appreciate a lot what you just said, and I hope people listening out there, and it's not just Americans, because there are some passports in this world that are very powerful, and there are others that are really hard to travel with. So just like you said, and a lot of people are not aware of that.
And South Africa's passport, it's one of those.
It's one of those. So yeah. So how are you? How long have you been here then?
Did you
tell the team, hey, look, I've got a big fight. I got to be here 2 months before.
You know what? I wanted to be way earlier.
Yeah.
But with the team and everyone, it was better not to. But I came in on Sunday morning.
Okay, Sunday morning. So I just came in myself. I don't even know what day it is, but it's Friday, right? So
yes, sir.
A little less than a week. How have you found it?
I love Manchester. You know what? It's. I went for a little walk today for the first time, actually. I went for a walk today and get out of bed.
Yeah, I saw you out there in the street.
Yeah, and then
we passed each other.
I love what I see. I like the vibe. I enjoy it.
And it's a good vibe.
You know, the people seem to be very friendly. I don't know if it's my accent. And they're like, oh, he's not from here. They're cool. They smile. And
where do they think you're from when they hear the accent?
Australia.
They think you're Australian,
Australia.
Yeah.
And no, I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. Every bit of it. I'm actually coming back.
It's a lovely city, and not just that, right now especially, you're at a very good time, because, I mean, Mancunians will tell you in the wintertime, this place can be it can be pretty rough.
Yeah, the first impression when I got off the airport, off the plane, because people always say when you go to the UK, it's always cloudy, it's always miserable, and on Sunday when I got off the plane, the sun was shining, there wasn't a cloud in the sky, and it was beautiful. I was like, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, it's great.
But then the last 4 days was
maybe
raining.
You brought it from California. So now are you living and training out in Santa Monica?
Yeah,
where are you?
Been in Santa Monica for 8 years now.
Oh, that's great life,
my
huh?
My bags and jumped the plane and
oh wow,
it's crazy, man, crazy. I just defended my world title against Matthew Atten, Brit boy.
Sure. Who, by the way, trains Campbell, who's on this card.
Yes.
How funny is that, right?
And I just saw him in the
he's a lovely guy.
And we immediately embraced each other because there's so much respect. And I love him. He's such a good dude.
Yeah.
And,
Let's know more about you. I want to know a couple things about you. First of all, you come from a very large family, am I right? 11 kids?
13.
13. So,
One of 13. One of 7 boys,
okay,
and 6 sisters.
And where do you fall in there?
Number eight.
You're number eight.
My dad was a tall dog and handsome Casanova.
Must have been prolific
man. Oh man, and you know, it was very hardworking, very very hard. My dad showed me what it means to be a hard worker. You know, growing up as a kid, I saw this man, and he would leave home at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning. He had his own business, and he'll come back at night at 9 p.m. So in a week you barely see him, and he was hardworking and. And he always showed us what it means to be hard work. And I'm grateful for that because I picked that up. He made sure I picked that up. And, massive family, man.
What did your dad do?
My dad was a security business. He had his own. Well, funny enough, my dad's dream was to become a world champion. So my dad was a professional fighter. He had one or two pro fights. And then he had an incident back home in South Africa. I mean, if you know the history of South Africa, it was, you know, back in the 80s, 90s. It was a tough place, and my dad had an incident, and the boxing board took his boxing license for life, and he had to do something else. And he opened up a business, security business, and was very successful from the moment he opened it up.
Now, is that where the boxing bug got instilled into you?
Yes.
Because this is a tough sport. It's not for everybody.
So, one of seven boys, right? I'm the smallest out of all my brothers. And my dad was the biggest boxing fan, the biggest. And ever since I was...
Who's his favorite fighter?
Muhammad Ali.
There you go.
And Evander Holyfield.
Oh, two greats.
Muhammad Ali and Evander Holyfield was my dad's...
Two greats.
Number, that was his number one spot.
Yeah.
And I was about 5-6 years old.
Okay.
And I would watch boxing with my dad.
Watch the fights, yeah.
And my dad would make me box.
Okay.
And you got to understand my demeanor as a man. I'm a very laid back.
Sure.
I don't like violence. I don't engage in violence. I tell the girls this. I'm a lover, not a fighter. I'm a hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
But my dad made sure. And funny enough, out of all the brothers, he would make all of us do whatever we have to do, train, run, do
sure.
it. But I was the one that was isolated and said, the others could get away by saying, I don't feel well, I don't want to do it. If I try that, my dad said, get your shoes.
Why? Because do you think he saw something in you?
That's it. We're getting there. So I'm getting goosebumps. Hey, I might get emotional, man.
Please, do whatever you feel is necessary.
I was about 10 years old. And by the time I was 10, like I tell you this, my earliest memory of me doing anything towards training was 5 years old. I was 5 years old. My dad would wake me up around about 5 a.m. in the morning before he goes to work, or maybe whatever he was home. He'd wake me up at 5 a.m. in the morning. I'm 5 years old. He put a beanie on my head in the winter, thick clothing, running shoes, and he says, let's go run. I'm 5 years old. So my dad would take me on the road, drive with his car next to me, and here's a five-year-old boy running in the middle of the morning. And my dad would just shout, run. Touch the front of the car. If you can touch the front of the car, you can get in. And I remember crying because I can't get to the front of the car. Every time I try to get to the front of the car, my dad put a little bit of pedal on the car. So I can't do that. And I'm crying and I'm crying. And the next moment I hear these cop sirens. So a cop pulls my dad over and I'm stopping and I'm watching the engagement. And I'm actually getting happy now because I know I'm going to get back in the car. I'm going to go home because a cop is giving my dad trouble. And I remember standing by the side of the car and watching the cop and my dad have an engagement. And the cop said to my dad, what are you doing? He said, child, like, you can't do this to your kid. Like we'll
it's abuse.
Yeah, like, get him back in the car. My dad walked right up to the cop and looked him in his face and he says, that is my son.
That's right. You don't tell me how to raise my son.
That is my son.
Thank you.
And he will be a man one day.
That's right.
Get in your car. There's better things to do. And a cop just turned around, got in his car and left. My dad said, run. And that is the moment.
Don't tell me how to raise my kid.
Like, he'll be
you'll find yourself
day.
In and some trouble. That's that. Not,
so,
yeah.
So from,
I mean, I'm not saying, no, I'm not saying no. a judgment is right or wrong, hey. But he was instilling something
Absolutely.
In you.
Especially that's obviously, up in South Africa. Especially yes. growing up
yes.
in South Africa.
That's right.
We fight there.
Yes.
And ever since then, like, me and my dad, our bonding were watching boxing.
Mm-hmm.
The other boys could get away, go play outside. Yeah. Me, I was always with my dad. Even when my dad was a fitness fanatic. He loved his boxing. He would hit the bag every day.
Yeah.
And I was the gym kid. I was the kid. I was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and I would be the one that would say, hey, Chris, let's go to the gym. You're my water boy. You're my towel boy. You're going to wipe my face. You're the timekeeper. Okay.
So you were just around it.
That's it. And I had no choice.
And like you said, like, I love it. You just said the water boy, towel boy, timekeeper. Like, there's so many different aspects to the sport when you're involved in it from a young age like that. You just – it's one of those things you just it gets instilled in you, all of it.
Absolutely. And I was 10 years old. My earliest memory was 10 years old. And my dad looked at me and said, boy, one day I will tell you something. And you'll understand it, but not now because you're a kid. And then I was like, well, whatever. And then this is the pressure I grew up with. If the kids wanted pocket money or they wanted sweets or they wanted to go to the movies. Now, even though I'm one of 13 kids and I've got brothers and sisters, my dad would say, okay, no problem. Call Chris. Chris, put on your running shoes. My dad would look at the kids and say, okay, Chris is going to run 2 kilometers, 2.4 kilometers, 1.6 mile, whatever. And if Chris can do that under a certain time, all of you go to the movies.
Yeah, you didn't, and everyone hates you.
If he doesn't, blame him. That was the preacher I grew up with as a kid.
How did you feel to your dad for this? Did you appreciate it at the time, or were you angry?
Not at all. I was so angry.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
I was so angry. I was a kid. I was so angry. So I started to remember. I said, my dad, since I was 10, my dad said, one day when you're man, I'm going to tell you something. Yeah. So as a kid, you can imagine living that kind of life. I started creating my own story in my head.
I can imagine.
And I was like, oh, I know what he's going to tell me. Maybe I'm adopted. Maybe I'm not even his son. And that's why I'm being treated differently. So as a kid, I'm crazy.
Because he sees.
He's so hard on me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that went on from the age of 10 till 18. And I remember I finished school. I got my final degree and a matric, the final grade 12. And I wanted to become an accountant, funny enough.
You like numbers? Video,
yeah, I was good at it. And I was like, I didn't want a box. Because of my demeanor, I had 97 amateur fights with 94 wins. I only won because I knew what winning meant to my dad. And I wanted my dad being my hero, my dad being my role model, my dad being my idol, my dad being my best friend. I knew what winning meant to him. It made him very happy. So I would win because I want to please him. But I didn't enjoy it. I didn't. And then I was like 18 years old.
You didn't enjoy any of it?
None of it. I was scared. Like, you have no idea. Like, I would fake going to amateur tournaments. I would be like, Dad, I'm sick. I don't feel well. I was like, pack your bag, let's go. And I'm like, I would try any way to get out because it wasn't my nature. I'm a lover. I tell you that because I see conflict. Either I try to diffuse it with my mouth or I walk around a corner to avoid it because that's not my way.
I understand.
So 18 years old, about to tell my dad I'm going to go to college and I'm going to study to be an accountant. And he comes to me and he goes, you ready to hear what I want to tell you? And I'm like, so ready for this. Like, I'm not his son. I'm adopted, whatever. I'm like, so ready. And he pulls me into a room. And he sits me down. He said, I know you know you're wondering why it was always you. Why so hard on you? Why I punish you? Why this or that? He said, because when I look at you, I see myself. And when I look at you, I see that you can one day become a world champion. You can be something. And it's my father's duty to push you as hard as I can. Now, luckily, it worked in his favor because I didn't resent him. I loved him.
Sure.
He said, and this is the thing he said. He's like, you inspire me. I want to be like you, my son.
That's deep.
And man,
that's
I
deep.
Looked at him and I was like, my hero, my best friend. What he sees me.
Your mind just blew, yeah?
And he leaves the room. And he's like, make up your mind what you want to do. And he came back and I said, Dad, I want to be a champion one day. And that's the day I was like, I want to be a champion one day for now. I really want to be a champion. Like, now I understand. Now I want to do this because I love the sport. And that changed everything for me.
Mm.
But me and my dad, boxing has brought me and my dad so close to each other.
Your dad was murdered, yeah?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Just over 3 years ago.
How have you dealt with that? How has the family dealt with that?
You know what? I didn't take time to mourn my dad's death. Why not? Because when, you know, it was so quick. I spoke to him. I lived in America, then South Africa, time changed. It was nighttime in South Africa. It was the morning, Christmas morning in South Africa, 25th of December. And he phoned me in America, which was the 24th at night. And he said, Merry Christmas, my son. I said, Dad, Merry Christmas. I said, but it's not Christmas yet in America.
Right. Did you tell him that you were in the... Wait, hold on. I'm trying to think of the time.
South Africa is 10 hours ahead.
Right. I always tell people when I talk to people, like when I'm here, because I'm ahead, I call them like, I'm calling you from the future. You know, because so, the time, yeah.
So I said, Dad, it's, and I was already in bed about to sleep. And I said, Dad, it's not Christmas yet.
It's not Christmas yet, yeah.
I will call you tomorrow morning.
Right.
And then tomorrow morning, what happened? And I called him and I couldn't get hold of him. And I called him the whole day, texted him, and I couldn't get hold of him.
Mm.
And on the 26th, I couldn't get hold of him. So 2 days, all of a sudden, I couldn't get hold of my dad. And then on the 27th, the morning of the 27th, my phone rang. And My manager, Peter Kahn, said, Chris, I'm so sorry. And I just wake up and I'm like,
You didn't
know nothing.
You didn't know nothing.
He goes, I'm so, so sorry, Chris. And I'm like, sorry about what? And he realized, I don't know.
How did Peter find out Facebook, before you did?
Facebook. Because I'm because of my career, I'm a pretty well-known guy back home in South Africa. My name is big back home, and because of my hard work and my blessings. So it was all over Facebook. And he goes, have a look at your phone. And I looked at my phone. And the moment, this is the thing, the moment Peter Kahn said, I am sorry, I knew I lost my dad.
You had you're a spiritual guy. There's something with you.
I'm a very, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up with a Christian family. I didn't have that. I found it.
Yeah.
And I will get there. It is a whole nother story, but I found it. But
there's a spirituality about you. Not necessarily religion, but a spirituality about you.
Very much
that. You feel very connected. Yes, and even still with your father, yes?
You have no idea.
Talk to me about that more. And
that's why people call me a gym rat. My friends chase me home. They say, dude, go home. You're always in the gym, always in the gym. People feel find inspiration for me because I work so hard, and they go, wow, you inspire me. But little do they know, it's when I'm in the gym when I feel my dad the most.
Yeah.
To this day, like when I'm in the gym, when I put a pair of gloves on, I do it so much more because it's so much, so easy for me to do it, if I can put it that way, because I feel connected to my dad. I feel him. And you're right, spiritual. I feel his spirit. I do. And anyway, go back. Peter Kahn, sorry. And I knew I lost my dad. And I looked and I was like, oh, I lost my dad. So immediately I booked a plane to go home. But I still couldn't believe it because I just spoke to him like 2 days ago. It felt like just now. I just spoke to him.
Yeah.
So I went back home and thinking going home and going grief with the family. When I went home, everyone immediately was drawn to me because I left. So I'm the first and only kid to ever leave my country. The whole family.
So you're from
Meyerton.
Yeah, Meyerton.
Which is towards, it's about an hour outside of Johannesburg.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about an hour outside of Johannesburg.
Okay.
And I went back home and everyone is immediately drawn to me, like wanting me to be their rock. Everyone's crying on my shoulder.
Sure.
I got to be tough. I got a song for everyone.
So you didn't really have a chance to mourn it properly.
So I didn't.
Because you had to be a rock for your family.
So I didn't. I was a rock for my family. Laid my dad to rest. And funny enough, I grew up, I wasn't allowed to cry. I was not. Now I cry like a baby because I've dealt with it. And that was one thing that my dad was wrong with. My dad did not allow his boys to cry. And my dad always said, men don't cry. Men don't cry. You're not a man if you cry. I've seen my dad cry once in his life, once. Never, ever. I always looked at him and I saw this strong figure and I was like, that's my hero. Like, he's an animal. And I saw him cry once. Anyway.
What were the circumstances that made him cry?
He lost his grandfather. He lost his dad.
Lost his dad.
He didn't even cry when he lost his mother or his brother or anyone. But when he lost his dad, even the whole day, he was happy. And I remember we went to the funeral of my grandfather. And the whole day, my dad was just making jokes with everyone. I was like, can this man cry? He just lost his best friend because him and his father were close.
I saw my dad cry, not to interject, but I saw my dad cry one time also, and that's it. And it was at the Vietnam.
Did it break you?
It was really rough, to be honest. Yeah, it was really rough. It was very strange.
My dad was up. I'll never forget. My dad was doing his speech, and he was about to do his speech, and he went up, and he pulled out the note he wrote, and he opened it, and he just started it. And he started crying like a little kid. Never saw this man cry in my life.
Yeah, it's heavy.
And the shock was, everyone was shocked because we haven't seen him cry. And everyone was just like, what to do? And I started crying like a kid because he's crying. So I'm crying for him. And I jumped up to hug him and I was there for him.
Yeah. That stuff can be contagious, like laughter. Sometimes people are laughing hysterically. You don't know what the joke, but it's just funny.
Yeah,
so crying can be like that too sometimes. Then, yeah.
So when losing my dad, even when I was on the doing my speech, I wanted to cry so bad, but all I could hear was his voice, like, "Men don't cry," and all my brothers were crying, and I enjoyed watching my brothers cry because I was like, "Oh, my dad's so proud of me right now because I'm not crying," because that was him. But and I didn't cry. During my speech, I didn't cry.
Yeah.
And then laying my dad to rest, when we dropped the coffin, I cried for a second. And I was like, I phoned my manager, Peter, get me a fight. So Peter said, I got a meeting with Top Rank at that time. You know, immediately I went from laying my dad's race right into a training camp. Busy. Second fight, busy. And then the pandemic happened. So then I was stuck at home. And that's the first time I was silent because there was no gym, there was no boxing. And I realized, I lost my dad.
It hit you.
It hit me. I lost my pops. And then I had to speak to people and deal with it, and I did. So to answer your question, how do you deal with it? I finally had time, thanks to the pandemic, I was forced to deal with the fact and come to realization that you lost your father. You got things to deal with. And I did.
It's funny, sometimes people say time and distance heals things. But sometimes I think time and distance make things harder. They make things harder, especially with someone that you love like that. You know, when in time you think to yourself, what would it be like to have them now, to have them, to see what they would say about this, or to see me go through this, or to be there to just have a conversation with them. You know, some of those things, they just don't get better. It might change. Maybe some days gets better, some days doesn't. But these are the people we love. But this is a bittersweet part of life, right?
Yeah, and I can honestly tell you, there's not a single day since I lost him that I don't think of him.
Of course. Not a single day. Of course, but he's always with you, and you are a spiritual man, so you definitely feel his presence. And like you said, boxing brings you closer to him. You know, the one time when I saw my dad cry, because I didn't get to finish that, it was at the Vietnam Memorial. And he saw the names of his schoolmates on the wall. And it was very strange. And he just, yeah, it was deep. It was deep. It was when they just built the Vietnam Memorial. I was a kid. I was young. And we went there. And yeah, and he was in the Air Force, my dad. But when he saw that his buddies that had been killed, that hit him. Yeah, it was strange. But my dad and I are not close. So I think you're very fortunate to have had that time with your father.
I am, because and I can get that, but some of my brothers resent my dad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They
sounds like you said, you could have resented your dad. 100%. It went the other way.
Yeah. Where I was like, I did everything to get his approval.
Of course.
I did everything right.
Sure.
I wasn't a bad kid in school. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't party. I didn't do all of that stuff.
When did you first start like fighting? I know it's 5 years old. You're out there doing road work.
Like that conversation with my dad.
Yeah.
18.
Okay.
I was like, all of a sudden I was like, a new life. I was like, I'm gonna do this. Like my dad think I can be a champion.
I know, but you've been pro for like 15 years,
yeah.
Almost 16 years now. But when did you start boxing as an amateur? Because you had a pretty prolific amateur career.
6 years old. I remember as the youngest 6 years old, we had show bouts.
Okay.
So at the age of 8, you start getting record on your win or lose in South Africa. So I was 6 years old when I went to the gym, and 8 years old when I started recording my first win.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things. And do you like it now?
I love it. It's
you
it's,
do.
It's my identity.
When did that is was it after your father passed that was it when you had that conversation?
Yeah, that conversation all of a sudden changed
it.
But then again, there's so much more to the story, right? Because now I was like, oh, now I'm gonna do it. Like, oh yeah.
Right.
And then I turned pro under the guidance of a very famous legendary trainer. Maybe you know him, I don't know, Nick Durant.
Okay.
Long blonde hair.
Of course.
Long blonde
hair. He died in a motorcycle accident.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you know him.
Yeah, unfortunately. So rest in peace.
Yes.
And his son is wonderful.
Getting goosebumps. Damien Durant.
Love his son.
Yes. And I turned pro.
He's a legend in SA.
He's a legend in SA. He was in Nigel Benn's corner when they beat.
He died in a motorcycle.
He was in Sugar Boy Malinga's corner when Sugar Boy Malinga beat Nigel Benn.
Well, hold on 1 second. We got to talk about that. Can I get a clean cup here? Yeah. Look at this. You see, even Matchroom Radio. Got there. I don't need a cup. I'll drink out of the can. Drink out of the can. Salute, my brother. It's such a pleasure. It's a Durant. And your pops.
Wow, you're right.
Yeah, wow. So, and you just brought up Malinga, man, beating Nigel Benn, which was a huge moment in South African boxing.
And Nick was, it was massive.
Huge.
Nick was in his corner.
Let's bring it back, because it's all full circle. I love this conversation, because it's like bringing it full circle. C- because obviously you're fighting Conor, which is Nigel's son. You're South African.
Yeah.
And that was a huge moment for South African boxing,
massive,
right?
Massive. We won the WBC world title, right?
Massive.
Yeah, and so I turned pro with Nick, and I was a boy.
Okay.
I was turning 19, and I was in a gym in the middle of Johannesburg, CBD, which is, you don't want to be there. Fair enough. You know, can I say it the way it is? Because
please, I wouldn't want it any other way.
I don't want to offend anyone or whatever.
I don't know what you're going to say, but please don't say anything racist, because that I won't stand for.
No, I won't.
All right, I don't know what you're going to say. Don't say that.
No,
but you can tell me how it is.
But
don't.
What I'm trying to say is Johannesburg is such a dangerous city that Afrikaans boys don't go there because we're scared. We get beat up.
Okay,
right?
Sure.
But that's where Nick's gym was.
Sure.
So I had to go into the middle of the township, right? So going into the gym, it was a gym full of men.
Okay.
Strong African men.
Yeah.
And he has a Afrikaans boy keep walking into the gym. And I'll tell you what, man, I got beat up every day. I would go home and spit blood. My nosebleed, blue eye. I get beat up by men. I mean, we're talking about Philip Ndu in the gym, Malcolm Clarsons, Silas Mabuza, Hawk Makapula. Baby Jay came there a few times.
Yeah, these are real fighters.
Like all these warriors, man.
These are real fighters.
And I'm getting my ass cracked. Like, I'm beat up. And I'm going home every day, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm not made for this. Like, this is crazy, dude. I'm not made for this.
This is crazy.
I get beat up every day. Yeah, maybe I'm just being delusional. Like, I don't have what it takes.
Yeah.
And this was a constant thing. And then my nose got busted up badly, and I had to go for an operation.
Mm-hmm.
This is within the first year.
So you're around 18, 19?
Yes, 19. And I remember going in for surgery, and I'm a man of, I pray. I believe in the power of prayer. And I went for.
And by the way, thank you for your prayer for me. I appreciate that.
Pleasure.
No, really, it means a lot to me. Yeah. Thank you.
It's amazing how we don't know how many, you know, so many people look out for us that we don't know. And like I said, I mean, you would have never known. I prayed for you, but I'm telling you, I did.
And it means so much to me. Thank you.
And I'm a praying man. So I was about to go get my nose fixed. And I remember laying on my bed and I said a prayer to God. I said, I don't think I'm doing the right thing. I've got this dream and vision. My mind is set on one thing, and that's to become a world champion, make it big. But it ain't looking good for me.
Right.
I'm like, give me a sign.
Right.
I'm like, God, give me a sign. Please give me a sign. And I went in for my operation. Now, non-believers or people that see things differently always argue with me. Fair enough. They're all entitled to their own opinion. But I went in for an operation, and I remember laying there, and I saw a light. I saw a bright, bright, bright light. The light was so bright that I couldn't keep my eyes properly open, and I heard a voice that said, keep doing what you're doing. And I tried finding the face of the voice through this light, and I couldn't because the light was so short, and all I could hear is, keep doing what you're doing. And that was I just knew. This is the funny thing. When I came, when after operation, I was woken up, everyone was standing around my bed. And everyone was like, do you remember what you said the moment you woke your eyes up? And I was like, no. And the doctor said, the very first thing, now this is just my experience, the very first thing that came out of your mouth, you asked me, where is Jesus? And immediately when he said that, I remember the voice, and I told the story. But that was my sign that, hey, just keep doing what you're doing.
So let me ask you this. Now you go back to this murderer's row of a gym. Do you have a different mentality now?
All of a sudden.
Now you're there.
Goosebumps.
Now you know.
All of a sudden, I go back to this gym, and things are starting to fall into place.
They're starting to fall into place.
I'm starting to doing better.
See,
and I'm starting
again,
to win, and I'm stronger.
But this is like, this whole story doesn't surprise me, because, again, it's that mindset.
It's a mindset.
It's huge.
It's
If you don't know what you can do, and if you got to be committed,
change the way you think.
I always tell people 2 feet in or 2 feet out. Half measures avail us nothing.
Power of the mind.
Yeah, right? Man. The power of it's the huge. Mind.
Change the way you think.
You just got to go. Like, life. There's no option of stopping. You it's can forward.
Think, you can think your way into depression.
Yeah, man.
You can think your way into pain. You can think your way into sadness. You can think your way into misery by thinking it.
It's powerful.
Change the way you think because the mind is so powerful. People don't give it credit enough for how powerful
Thank you.
The shift
Thank
in the
you.
Mind is.
Thank you.
And I can tell you about that. Like,
I can too.
James, yes, yes.
I can too, brother.
Are, man,
I can
I'm looking too. At you.
I can
I'm looking
too.
At you. I would. You're a strong dude. I'm looking at you. You look good.
I wish I you felt look, as good as I looked.
You look good.
I feel good, but I'm in a lot of pain. I'm in a lot of pain, but it's
you,
I don't
you're
give
not
it.
Showing it.
I throw some
mindset.
I throw some motherfucking hate on
Come
that
on.
Pain. Sorry,
on. Pain.
It's I what
have,
I do.
You know, I say. I
you
say
know,
pain.
I don't. I just don't give it
I
the
love
time.
Pain.
I don't give it the time.
Reminds me, I'm human. Like,
I just don't
pain.
Give it the time.
Come on, man.
I'm on to other
and
stuff.
I went back to the gym and things started working out for me.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, you know, and I went on from up and up and up and I won the South African title and I was undefeated, 15-0, undefeated. I went to Serbia and I fought the champions, Nicholas Tavares.
That's your first loss, right?
I never lost that fight.
Yeah.
Everyone will tell you. You can go watch
yeah,
that
but
fight.
I mean, yes, under Ledger, it's your first
yes,
loss, right?
But I beat him in Serbia. Yeah. And
but how did that take the wind out of your sails a little bit?
At first, when because that's the first time I didn't get my hand raised in
yeah.
15 pro fights.
Sure.
And I was like, I beat this kid in a room.
Of course.
And that's the first time I understood that politics and boxing, because I never understood politics
sure,
and boxing. I
sure.
was like, ah, judges, home decision, all of that kind of stuff. And it did take the wind out of myself for a very short moment because that was a televised fight. So when I went back to South Africa,
right.
all my fans, everyone knew I was a champion. They were like, right. we watched it, you won.
Yeah.
And it made me feel like a winner. So I never,
sure.
and I was like, I'm still a freaking
okay,
winner.
Good.
I got
okay,
one
good.
Him. So it didn't
good.
Change anything.
Good, good, good.
We went on. And then I fought the gold medalist, Commonwealth champion, Bongani Mulasi, now at pros. And I was afraid of this guy. And I fought him for the IBO world title eliminator. Mm. I was afraid of him, really afraid of him. Tall, southpaw, gold medalist. I think at the time he was 16-1 as a pro with like 13 or 14 knockouts. Scared of him. I
scared of him, why?
Because I fought him in amateurs.
And you knew how good he was?
My last amateur
was
fight,
he really strong?
Very strong. He's like 14.
So you were 14. Afraid of getting knocked out?
Yeah,
you were.
I was afraid of getting knocked out.
And what about you fighting? Because you're a southpaw.
Yeah.
So you fighting southpaws, did that pose? Are you not used to that?
No, it's you know. It
that was not
make
a problem
a big
for
sense.
You.
You know, like I said, I fought Bongani Mualasi, who was a southpaw, and I lost to him.
Okay.
I beat him. Like, beat him.
Right.
Then I fought Errol Spence, and he beat me.
Well, okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But I mean,
right.
so I don't.
You're not too worried about that.
Trouble about that. But then I remember being so afraid of Bongani Mualasi, and then I beat him because I knew how to beat him. And from Bongani Mualasi, Kaiser Mabuza came to America.
Okay.
To fight Kendall Holt.
Yeah.
At the time, Kendall Holt was hot and
three times
world champion, and Kaiser Mabuza knocked out Kendall Holt in like 7 rounds.
Sure.
And that's who I'm up against for the IBO world title. And I was right. like, oh, man. And I beat Kaiser Mabuza. And I was like, oh, you know what? I got something. Like, and I'm right. a world champion. So my
Your dad was alive?
My dad was alive.
He saw this.
My dad
I'm
was
so
alive.
Happy for this,
my
man.
My dad was alive.
Was he just over the moon?
Man, I cannot
He was over the moon.
Like, I was like, but now my grandfather was still alive.
Yeah.
So I didn't see my dad cry. So I was like, the day I win a world title, that guy's going to
cry. He better cry. He better cry, right? If he doesn't cry, I'm going to make him cry.
And I just want to say this. Power, the words has got so much power. Be very careful.
Yeah,
what
true.
You speak it into existence. Be very aware of what you speak. Because I was 19 years old, and my dad said, what's your goal here?
Mm.
I said, in 5 years' time, I want to be a world champion. I just threw out a number. I said, in 5 years' time, I want to be a world champion. So that makes me 24. And life went on. And the night I beat Kaiser Mabuza, my dad asked me, how old are you? And I was like, I'm 24. And I realized, I was like, oh, damn. And that's, again, a testimony to the power of words.
Yeah.
Right? So then I beat Kaiser, and then I got to fight. I defended against Sebastian Lujan, who was a big draw on Pacquiao cards. And then I defended against the very own Brit, Matthew Atten, Ricky Atten's brother, after he lost to Canelo.
That was his last fight.
That was his last fight.
That was his last fight.
And it was Bongani who lost his last fight as well.
It was his last fight, yeah.
And I beat Matthew. And then wow. I woke up. Because my vision, I'm all about vision, right? I live for that. If I can close my eyes and I can see it, I'm a believer. So I believe that's God's way of showing me, like, this is what I have for your life. Now you got to trust me. You got to go work hard. You got to have faith. The word faith. You got to have faith and trust the process. Trust in me and just go. No, like, it's gonna be bumpy, but don't lose sight.
Yeah.
So absolutely. My sight was America. I want to go to America because now you see all these fights, Freddie Roach, Manny Pacquiao, Madison Square Garden. You see all these things, and you make a dream, and you're like, one day I want to be there. So after I defended my world title against Matthew Atten, and again, I'm a star back home. I've got cars. I've got money in my bank account. I'm a world champion. Got girls. Like, I'm living a good life. And I walk out on my balcony. I fought Matthew on the Saturday in South Africa. The Sunday, I walked out on my balcony, and I was so sad. I was so empty inside of me. And I walked out on my balcony. And I was like, why? I should be the happiest man right now. But I'm not. Why not? Because I'm not happy in South Africa. Like I want bigger things. I want to compete against the Pacquiao's at the time, you know, kid with dreams, the Pacquiao's, the big guys. I want to be in that circle. I want to test myself.
And I mean, we're talking. You've always campaigned at 147.
Always.
And what a division!
What a division, right?
To me, 147 is the best division in boxing. Always has been. That's I'm not saying right now per se, although there is there are some great fighters there. But I'm just saying, for me, 147 is always the gem of a division because, first of all, you know, I love Sugar Ray Leonard's my favorite fighter of all time.
Mine too.
Okay, so there you go. So, but like, these guys have the speed and the stamina of the lightweights, but they've got the pop of the bigger guys.
Yeah.
147 is just, just a sweet spot, man. I mean, look, I like all the divisions, but 147 to me is always, it's always the sweet spot. It's where I love it.
So I knew what I wanted. So I picked up my phone and I phoned my father. I said, Dad, I want to come and see you. So where I lived was about an hour's drive to where my dad lived. I lived there, but the time now I live in Johannesburg. So I drive to my dad and I said, Dad, not happy. I want to go to America. How do you feel about it? Now, here's the thing. My dad was the only man to stand in my way. If my dad said, don't go, it's better over here, I would have never packed my bags because of that relationship with my dad. I trusted anything my dad told me. I trusted. And all he said to me was like, what are you waiting for? Let me know when I can drop you off at the airport. That was it.
Wow. That's great. Yeah.
3 weeks from that conversation, I packed my bags.
Yeah.
Like a very, very immature boy, 26 years old. I had a tourist visa to come to America. I didn't even do my homework to see what I need to work as visa, blah, blah, blah. And I came to America and I landed at LAX and I was like, no one.
How did you hook up with Freddie? When did that happen?
A phone call. So I trained out of a gym in Carson, Los Angeles, Carson, The Rock. The gym's called The Rock. And I was in the gym there with a bunch of Mexican strong fighters. And you know, this is what I love about the sport of boxing. You don't need to speak the same language.
You speak the same language.
Yes. In the ring.
In the ring.
You can speak Mexican. I can speak Afrikaans.
Yeah. But in that ring, it's Spanish, we speak, not Mexican. But yes, I understand.
Sorry. See, I don't even know. Spanish.
Right.
You speak Spanish. Yeah. I speak Afrikaans. But when in that ring,
you guys still speak the same language. That's it.
And we get respect through that.
One of the things, Chris, that I love about this sport so much that you're putting your finger on right now is it's a global sport. And I love it. So it's
global.
It's global. Whether it's the Philippines, whether it's Korea, whether it's Japan, whether it's South America, Bogota, Dominican Republic, right. Panama, it doesn't matter.
South Africa,
there's fighters everywhere. And it's just global,
you're right.
Great.
And we connect through that.
I love it. Like England, we're in Spain and Italy, Germany, all over, France.
So I stand my man and do my thing. And then one day, I get a phone call out of nowhere.
Okay.
Now, here's a kid that grew up. I'll never forget it, sitting on my dad's bed, watching Freddie and Pacquiao. And I looked at it, and I was like having my dreams. I looked at my dad and said, Dad, man, you think I'm good enough to be like with Freddie? But I said, yes, you one day you will be. And again, my dad saying that, I was like, yes, I will. And out of nowhere, I get a phone call one morning. My phone ring, and I pick it up, and it's, hey, Chris. I'm like, hello, who's this? And he goes, hey, it's Freddie Rhodes. And I almost dropped my phone. I was like, And he goes, I was like, I know who you are. And he goes, hey, I've got a fighter called Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto was getting ready to fight Sergio Martinez for the middleweight championship of the world. He goes, I got a fighter called...
Love both guys.
He goes, I got a fighter called Miguel Cotto. I need southpaw sparring. Can you come in on Monday? I said, I'll be there. Okay, I'll be there. And I hang the phone up. And I was like, what did I just do? Like, I know Miguel Cotto. And I just said yes. I'm like, oh, damn. But I also knew this is my moment. This is the thing. Sure. A lot of people miss the opportunity of success. Listen to this. A lot of people miss the opportunity of success because they're afraid to take risks in life. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's it.
A lot of people have a lot of fear of failure.
Yes, that's it.
Afraid to fail.
So they don't take that risk. And
when
they
you don't care and you're just willing to just take your shot.
So this is getting even more. This is getting even better. So I show up. I show up at
Wild Card.
And I remember opening that door, and in the middle of the ring is a bunch of media people outside the ring. In the middle of the ring is Freddie and Cotto, and I'm starstruck. I spoke about this.
Better get over that quick because you're about to get in there.
But I see these guys. And Freddie comes and introduced me to Miguel. Miguel was very shortish, but that all changed. But a lovely guy.
Oh, he's wonderful.
And, oh, he's the best. And Freddie was like, hey, Freddie. And I was starstruck and all these media people. But I also knew this is my moment because I need to get my name out in America.
Of course.
Like I need to. And Freddie said, yeah. So I need you to be like Sergio Martinez. Okay, you got to try and... imitate Sergio Martinez, okay?
Right.
I go, yes. I had no idea who Sergio Martinez was. I had no idea his style. And Freddie goes, you gotta fight like Sergio, okay? I go, yeah, no problem. He goes, you know how Sergio fights? Like, I'm like, yeah, I know. I had no idea, but when someone hands you an opportunity,
you take it.
Say yes.
Sure.
You go figure stuff out. That was that moment. I just said yes. Luckily, I'm sure Freddie looked at me and was like, he doesn't know. And Freddie goes, yeah, so basically, you got to keep your hands low. Like, Sergio's got his hands low. He's like quite quick. Like, I was like, yeah. And a bell ring, ding, ding, ding. So I'm over exaggerating. I'm coming out of the corner with my hands super low. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm Sergio Martinez, hands low. I got this. And Cotto stepped in and threw a punch. I stepped back and I threw a punch. So he missed and I landed. And everyone just went, oh. It's all over YouTube. I don't want to talk about it. But something happened that moment. Within 10 seconds of the first round, something happened. And I won Cotto's respect. And I won everyone's respect. We did, I think, six rounds.
Mm-hmm.
It went amazing. And Freddie said, who's your coach? And I said, I don't have one. And he goes, after the fight, after Cotto fight, come knock on my door. The last day.
That's huge respect.
That's it. That's
how that I got gym. To, I mean, that's how that I got gym.
To, it can change your life.
Yeah, that gym is serious.
With Freddie,
it's a lot of serious fighters coming out of that
spot.
The last
day of sparring with Cotto, in walks Oscar De La Hoya, and they watch me spar with Cotto, and I get out of the ring, and Oscar goes, "What are you doing the next 5 weeks?" And I go, "Nothing." And he goes, "I got a fighter called Miguel Canelo Alvarez. He's fighting Lara.
There was Landy Lara.
He goes, I need
tricky
you to come,
fighter.
I need you to come to San Diego and spar." So I went straight from Cotto camp straight into Canelo camp.
Yeah, but you're in the hotbed. You're in the hotbed. See, that's the whole difference. Where when you go to Los Angeles,
yes,
this is where a lot
but
of things
also
are happening.
How saying yes can change your life.
Not just that, Chris, but you've been fighting since you're 8 years old. Yeah. So I mean. This whole,
thank you.
You work your whole life to become the overnight success. Like you all these years. This wasn't just finally you had to say yes to get this opportunity. But you were a fighter.
All those times in those gyms
with Silas Mambuza and all these guys.
This is what I'm telling people. Yeah. Like, people don't know my story, but I hope that people that hear my story right now gives me a little bit more respect because
it's a lot of years of work.
You know what? I can get even deeper and tell you that, like, I almost killed myself.
Thank God you didn't.
Thank God I didn't. I almost took my own life. After losing to Errol Spence Jr., I was depressed, because...
But why?
Because this is the bad thing.
Talk about that.
Okay,
let me tell you why.
Because when you win, we have the best fans in the world. We have the best supporters in the world. When you win, people love you. They pick you up. They support you. They want to be your friend. They want to go grab a drink with you.
Right.
They want to be around you. But when you take a beating, all of a sudden you go home alone. There's something about it. And people,
I know, social media. This is the thing about life, though. So, but you can't, but hold on, brother. Let's press pause just for a second. And this is not, I'm not trying to patronize you because it's not about that. No. You're a man and you know things. But, like, you got to have thick skin to be in the game.
Absolutely.
And, like,
I agree.
You know, it's funny because sometimes I meet fighters that they're so strong physically, but inside, maybe not so much. And it's like, you got to be strong on the inside, too.
So losing to Errol Spence was the first time I really tasted defeat.
Yeah.
So I never knew. Even when I lost to Stevanovic, I went home and I was lifted up. Even at the
arena. Sure, I understand.
So I never understood. I was never introduced to what it feels like to be a loser.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. So that was the first time. Right. And I'm in America. I don't have family. I don't have nobody. And I remember coming back from the Errol Spence
fight. You were dejected.
And I came back from this. This was the moment that broke me and made me a better man, a stronger man.
Right.
I came back to LA and I had a busted face. And I walked down the street and I saw one of my mates that he would love to see me always.
Sure.
And I saw him see me. And the moment he saw me, he turned his back on me and walked away. No. That's the moment that broke me. I was like, oh, wow.
Right.
But that is also the moment I realized, screw this.
Yeah.
This sport, I do it for me.
Thank you. That's
the, like, this sport.
So you just, the key right there.
That's it.
You just hit the whole key of everything.
It.
So it's not just boxing.
So it hurt me.
In life. That's people it. Out there yes. in TV land, yes. radio land, do it for you.
Do you.
Because, don't do it like for anybody else.
You, because the truth is, nobody because that's feels what nothing matters. For you. Nobody feels nothing for you.
Yeah.
You got to feel it for yourself.
That's it, man.
And that was the moment that's I discovered it. That.
That's it.
But anyway, I lost everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an IBO world champion. I lost my belt.
Right.
I went into a lawsuit here in America. I didn't have friends, family. I was by myself. I went to court case. I lost a lot of money. I lost my belt. I lost everything. I went from being on top of the world to sleeping on a couch for 2 days. I didn't have food. 2 days I didn't eat food. My dad being in America, my dad being back in South Africa, me being in America, I could never tell my dad that I'm struggling.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't want to disappoint him. In my head, I was like, oh, he'll be disappointed.
Right.
So every time my dad would phone me and say, hey, my boy, what's up? How are you doing? I said, Dad, I'm good. Again.
What stopped
one
you?
One smile has the power to hold back 1,000 questions. One smile has the power to hold back 1,000 questions. So all I need to do is walk into a room, smile, and no one is going to think anything is wrong.
Right, sure.
And you erase all these, hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
So that was my life.
Yeah.
I would smile and fake it. And I went back home.
I'm sorry to hear that. It's very painful to hear that.
But again, it made me a better man. It made me strong. It made me vulnerable.
Sure.
Because I wasn't vulnerable.
Yeah.
So this is the moment. This is the turning point where I almost took my own life. I was struggling. I was sleeping on a couch. I was used to this fancy life. I was now losing everything. I lost the court case, lost my belt, lost my money. I lost everything. The people back home was running move. Nothing is happening. And my dad phones me and he goes, my son, how are you doing? I said, Dad, I'm lying. Dad, I'm good. I'm great. It's about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. South African time, morning, American night. And he goes, you good? I was like, Dad, I'm amazing. He goes, what's coming for you? I was like, Dad, something big's coming. Nothing was coming. I was just trying to keep him happy. And I hang up the phone and my stomach growled. Badly because I haven't eaten for 2 days because I don't have money. I've got too much pride to ask people for help. It's pride is ego and pride is an ugly thing. And my stomach was growling, man. I was like, I haven't eaten for 2 days. Wow, how did I end up here? From a world champion to sleeping on a couch. Like, how did this happen? And I was like, let's do what I only know to do, and that's to go train. So I put my running shoes on in the middle of the night. And I'm like, I'm going to go for a run. I'm starting to go for a run, just a nice casual run. And as I'm running along the road, I'm starting to get the idea that I'm a failure. I've lost. I've disappointed everyone. I've messed up. I've disappointed my dad, if only he can see me. And there was a car coming from the front. And as the car was coming closer, the more I was like, yeah, I'm tired. I'm tired. I can end all of this right now. I can just jump. And as I was running and as the car was coming, the more I got encouraged to jump. And as close to the car come, the more I was like, sure, like, yep. And I blacked out for a split second. It happened so quick. And when I stepped in the road, the car was past me. And I realized, I was like, what am I doing? It almost took my own life. What am I thinking? And I started crying. I started crying like a little kid. I fell to my knees, and I started crying. And then, before I knew it, I was in an argument with God. I was looking up in the heavens, and I was like, God, how did you forsake me? How did you leave me? Look at me. I'm a failure. And I was angry. I yelled. I screamed. I cried. And it's as if I could hear his voice in my head, and he said, I've always been here. I've always been here right by you. You have left me. I've always been here. You chose to walk the path yourself. When is the last time, Chris, you prayed and asked me for help? And I realized it's been months. Since I got to America, it was all about me figuring out life. I forgot about my faith. I forgot about asking for help. And I realized where I went wrong.
So you got on your knees.
I got on my knees. And I begged for forgiveness. I said, give me one more shot. One more shot. I'm better than this. And he picked me up. He answered my prayers. You have no idea. Changed my life.
God bless you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
It's deep. And I know a big part of your plight also is to help people with going through mental struggle.
I'm very vulnerable about this.
Yeah, and it's a great thing, and people need to talk more about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. I was like, how can I expect people to help me if I keep smiling?
Yeah.
I got to start being honest and being vulnerable.
Like you said, a smile can hold back a thousand questions.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, so I started telling people, like, I don't always feel like getting up.
Course.
And I don't always have a good day.
This is life, man.
And I started being vulnerable. And then my following grew and people went like, I know it. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. Thank you for being vulnerable.
Yeah, you're a human being. You're honest. People. Absolutely.
And when I go to South Africa, I go to schools, I go to people, I go to talk, I try and inspire people because it's okay not to be okay.
That's right.
Okay not to be okay. You don't have to have it together every day.
That's it.
It's okay. You're human.
There's so much I could talk to you about,
man,
more.
I
want to talk to you about Conor McGregor, sparring with Conor.
Yeah.
You know, but speaking of Conor's, let's just really quick, let's try to wrap it up. Two things, because I want to talk to you, obviously, about your fight with Conor. Ben, how do you see this fight going? You think you got a shot? You think?
Absolutely.
Why? Tell me. Because, why do you have a shot?
Because of my skill, because of my experience, because I've been here before.
So how does this fight go down? Do you box him? Do you slug him?
And you know what? We all have a plan. That's true. We all have a plan told to step in that ring and punches go. And I know Conor's got a plan. He better have one.
Right.
And I have a plan. I better have one. But I know what I'm good at. You know.
Okay.
I'm a boxer.
Okay.
You know? So I got to do what I got to do to win.
Okay.
Know? Conor. Is a fighter. He's a strong, I'm going to say what he said because he corrected me. He's a passionate fighter. He's a fighter. I'm a boxer. And I'm not saying he's a bad boxer. I'm saying he's a fighter. That's his strength. I'm a boxer. And one of us, the game plan is going to go either way. Either his way or my way.
Well, do you have plan A, B, and C, or do you just kind of have?
Of course. You got to once you know you got to start adapting. You know, once you step in that ring,
you
if things doesn't work out, you got to be able to adapt.
Right.
But if I close my eyes, I see what I want to see. That I see how I want to see that fight.
Okay.
I see my hand getting raised. I'm expecting fire. So I'm expecting. You know, I have to be on, and I have to make sure I can establish my rhythm and I can do me. And the one that's going to establish his rhythm early is the one that's going to have the upper hand. And I just got to go out there and stay focused 3 minutes at a time, one round at a time. And
let me ask you this. This is like my own question before, because I wanted to end – talking to you on that, but I'm just curious because boxing has been such a big part of your life for so long. You've been pro for a long time, like we've talked about. What happens with you after boxing? What do you want to do?
Oh man, good question. Good question. Again, I love inspiring people, right?
Yeah.
I can talk. You can put me on a stage, I can talk.
Yeah.
I can silence a room.
We're figuring that out. No, I'm just kidding.
I can silence a room and I get people's attention. I've noticed that.
Yeah, yeah.
So my passion is inspiring people. So I would like to go around and talk and talk more to people And there's a way of, you can make a life out of being a speaker.
Sure.
You know, and I want to do that after boxing. And obviously my passion is always boxing. I've got so many opportunities of investors that's like, okay, hey, come up with a gym idea. We'll invest in you, open up a gym. That's always something I will do.
Okay.
Is have my own kind of gym kind of.
So it's going to stay kind of in the vein of boxing and inspiring and people. I love that. Yeah. I love that. All right. That makes me happy. Are you okay to answer a couple of fan questions?
Let's go.
Okay, let me get them. They're right here. Okay, let's see what we got. Okay, Harry the Harris asks Chris, boxing aside, what other sports do you enjoy watching or playing?
Rugby.
Okay.
The most.
I like that. Who's your team?
Springboks.
There you go. Not the All Blacks. The World Champions. Not the All Blacks.
Can I recruit the World Champions?
There you go.
We are the World Champions.
Love rugby. It's awesome. It's like boxing just with a ball. It's like fighting with a ball.
Right? It's so, you know, no padding.
Yeah.
Bone on bone.
No, they're tough guys. They're tough guys. Tough. All right. Bring Back the Nail asks Chris, can you explain what your manager Peter Kahn has done for your career? We've seen it with loads before and more recently George Kambosos Jr. He seems a legit guy.
Yeah. I mean, look at this. He made this fight happen. He almost made... In 2017, I was ranked number 6, I think, by IBF, and I was right up there in the top 10s, and we almost made a fight with Pacquiao because at the time, Pacquiao could not fight in the States because of tax issues, and the fight almost went to South Africa. So he almost made that happen. My government messed that up because of money issues. My government messed that opportunity up. He always told me to stay ready. We're going to get it. And this opportunity is Peter Kahn. So he's working.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing him. We always have dinner together, so big fan of Peter. Tracy Moore asks Chris, this is the final one. Have you managed to bump into Matthew Hatton this week? You were his opponent. Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. We talked about that. That's great.
In the gym, and the first time the moment we saw each other, big smiles, we embraced each other, hugged each other. He always speaks highly of me. A lot of respect. A lot of love between me and him. Yeah, it was fun to see him.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. I got to see him earlier today at the weigh-in, and he's obviously training Campbell, and it's going to be good to see Campbell in action. I know this is big for Campbell because he's fighting in Manchester, and obviously they're proud Mancunians, so it's great. So look, I'm so happy that you're finally getting to fight here in the UK, and you're here, and it's great. Thank you for spending this time to talk with us and share this wonderful stuff, and we look forward to the fight. We wish you the best of luck. Main event tomorrow night, everyone. Chris Van Heerden, Conor Benn, AO Arena in Manchester, England, live on DAZN Matchroom Boxing. And thank you so much. And we'll be back next week. We'll be in Verbania, Italy. So until then, thanks a lot, guys. Take care.